Blog Talk Radio.
Sharing. Today we're going to talk with the cast and creators of a new web series called Voyeur. Our guests include Lucas Beltry, Chris Emmons, and Audio Ash. I hope I got everybody right. Hi, guys.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi, welcome to the show. Did I get everybody's names or did I mess anybody up?
No, that's good.
That's good.
Okay. We're good. Okay. All right. So why don't we start by introducing each of you and telling the audience a little bit about yourself. Audio, why don't you go first?
Okay. My name is Audio Ash. I'm the creator and director of Voyeur. I'm born in Nigeria, grew up in Boston area, and I've been filmmaking for the last six, seven years. So that's basically it.
Okay. Chris, why don't you go next?
Yeah, I'm Christopher Emmons. I'm the writer on the show. I don't know, it's funny. Like, our show is a lot about privacy and oversharing, so I'm going to not overshare here. I'm paranoid, so paranoid.
Well, you could share a little. That's what interviews are about.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I've been working in the industry for about the same time, you know, and I'm from Milwaukee, actually, and New York and L.A. and everywhere else.
It sounds like me. I'm a traveler, too. Hi, Lucas. You're next.
My name's Lucas. I'm the lead actor who plays Ira Billingsley on the show. Originally from upstate New York and currently live in New York now. I recently got into acting, a lot more recent than you guys who are on the line with me. Probably about acting now for about 6 to 8 months, so not too long. This was a real blessing of a project that kind of almost fell into my lap and got lucky enough to do it. So it's one of my first.
That's really cool. Now, who would like to address what Voyeur is about? Do you, anyone?
Let's give that
like
to Chris.
Chris? Okay.
Oh, yeah, we're putting it on me. Okay. Yeah, no.
You're on the spotlight, Chris.
yeah. So the lead character that Lucas plays, as he said, his name, Ira Billingsley, he's sort of the embodiment of a lot of our fears about socially geared technology, so social media, things like that. I think where it gets interesting is that, you know, we're talking about how in this day and age, are you more the person that you portray yourself as on social media than you are your actual physical and intellectual self, or are you more, you know, the opposite of that? And I think that he's an infinitely complex character, but we're looking at, you know, the problems with him trying to connect with people and not seeing that he's complex because they only see what he's putting forward, you know, on the surface. And I think that's the main theme throughout the story. So he, because he can't really connect with people, he then starts trying to connect with them through other means. So he's someone that will, you know, look at your apartment on Facebook and he'll see some identifying characteristics that help him get to know you, and he might even then, you know, take it a step further and see, you know, that you checked into the airport, you're going on vacation. Oh, that means that they're not at home. Maybe I can go invade their home and spend some time in there and really get to know this person that I'm friends with on social media but I've never met before. Or maybe maybe he would learn, maybe he'd learn more about that person through invading their home than he would through meeting them in person or looking at their profile, because how much are we really sharing true about ourselves in this day and age? So it's really focused on those themes and the complexity around this character as he tries to connect with people in a world where it's hard to break the surface.
So he's basically a stalker?
Yeah, well, if I can add a little bit. So being the creator of the project, this particular character what he is a reflection of who I am from a certain part. As a filmmaker, I'm obsessed with people. I'm a people watcher. I like to know about people. I like to look at people from the outside and surmise what their lives are like. And I think we all do that, especially with with social media. I think we're able to peer into people's lives or the information that they give us, and determine who this person is, what this person is. With someone like our character Ira, he's got a lot of time on his hands, and he is also just as curious as most of us are about other people. But he has far less social tact, to the point where he wants to know more. He's extremely inquisitive, and kind of falls into this whole stalking thing almost accidentally. And the more and more he gets further into it, the more obsessed he becomes with knowing who other people are, what their lives are, especially once he starts to realize that the perception that they give via social media on the outside doesn't always match their reality.
Well, that's true. That's very interesting. And how do you go about preparing yourself to play that kind of a character, Lucas of Ira? How do you prepare yourself?
Well, I watch a lot of movies, obviously. I think that's the best way to learn anything, especially in film. So, actually, the first time Audio called me about the project, he mentioned The Talented Mr. Ripley with Matt Damon. And so that was, honestly, the first project I watched. Just to see that, Matt Damon plays this, this character who seems like there's nothing wrong with him, but he just has this little irk about him almost that makes him different and makes him almost stalkerish, almost kind of the same type of character. So I watched that, and then, honestly, people watching helps a lot, too, just doing that on your own. Like Audio said, I think most people in filmmaking or acting or anything, you need to pay attention to other people, because it's how you can pull and draw to build a character or build a story or anything. So those were basically the two main avenues.
That makes sense. And when you're playing the character of Ira, do you have an affection for him? Do you worry about the character?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, our audience has only seen the first episode, and obviously we all know a lot more than everyone else, but there's a lot that goes into Ira about why he's doing this. And obviously I don't want to give anything away, but he's very complex. It's not just as simple as stalking. It goes a lot deeper than that, and I definitely have an affinity for him.
Interesting. And, Audio, how did you come up with the idea of doing it as a web series and not pitching it to, Netflix or cable or something?
Well, one thing that one of the reasons that we went with the web series is because of the characters in the project. I feel like, this day and age, when you watch web series, there's so many characters that their stories are developed that a broad audience can pick and choose who they resonate most with. When you watch a lot of these shows, some people might say, "Oh, I hate this guy," or "I hate this guy, but I love this guy." And because of this one particular character that you have, somebody can be really drawn to the show. and root for this one person. So when developing the story, we had a series of characters that we were like, wow, you know, I think he's too intricate, or he or she is too intricate of a part, you know, to really focus on just Ira and this, have this person be, you know, just a supplementary character. Plus, it was just the way it was developed. We wanted to base each show on a particular character or a particular home that he goes to, or, you know, a new subject that he finds. And we just thought it would be smoother, and just we could end each episode on a clincher from person to person via series, as opposed to you know, a full length film or a feature film.
Interesting. Now, Chris, you write the episodes. Do you collaborate with Audio, or is it something that you do and then maybe go back and forth with the different people in the cast? How does it work for creating each episode?
Well, I mean, the first thing, like, we're looking to do multiple seasons on this, and I think it's going to change where we do maybe start to, you know, address what the actors are feeling or thinking. But in this first, you know, in this first season, we haven't really had the chance to sit down with the actors as well as a group and formulate the writing. But that's a very interesting thing you brought up, because, like, they are living the role, and they're, you know, they might see or feel something that we don't, just having to live it. So that's actually something I'd be interested in doing going forward. But in terms of what we've done so far, the whole thing started with Audio. He brought the project to me, and I, you know, I bothered him endlessly about, you know, what I thought I could do to it. But I think the thing begins and ends with him. I've just been trying to, you know, make every character feel real and have their own kind of heartbeat, and, you know, fit within the story that Audio is trying to tell here, and just kind of make it work, make it tangible, make it scary, make it funny, make it heartfelt, and all those things that you want it to be. But yeah, you know, we came up with the first structure of the series together, and you know, we were bouncing ideas back and forth. Then I went off, did the writing, and then I bring it back to him, and he kind of gives input and helps shape it from there. So it was really collaborative.
That's something that I think is very important in any creation of, you know, especially if it's a cast, you know, plays, TV shows, movies, web series, whatever. Audio, how do you feel about the collaboration with the writer and the cast?
Yeah, I mean, I was an actor first, turned director. So I've been on both ends of the spectrum. I was that annoying actor that was always telling directors my thoughts and how I think this could be better, completely oblivious that this is one individual subjective opinion and a subjective story. So I thought it was best to kind of transition to directing and creating. So I'm pretty open, you know, when it comes to input from others. You know, ultimately I know what I want to do, but I am not opposed to listening to anyone else's personal opinions and weighing them out, seeing if it's the best, you know, decision for the entire project. So obviously Chris was the writer, and he had a lot of input within the story. I mean, I developed the concept and, you know, had specific ideas, but Chris really was the one that cultivated the dialogue, the story's progression, the character's progression, you know, and I basically agreed with most of what he said. You know, I had a couple tweaks here and there, but, you know, he really shaped the project. And Lucas has had a lot of input as well, too. You know, he's, you know, has, from what I can tell, he's, you know, basically memorized the entire script in terms of the story and the everyone else's dialogue as well, too, verbatim. And, you know, he's been giving a ton of input on set that I've definitely used as well, too. So I have no problem with that.
I think one of the other really interesting things to address with Lucas's performance is that so much of what he does is nonverbal, and I think it would be interesting to hear you speak to that.
I think that's really good. Lucas, when you do things with your face, which you have to do, especially your eyes, do you rehearse it? Or is it just something that comes naturally?
I don't know if it comes naturally, but there were, when I first got the script from him and I saw how, it's not little dialogue, but there's not much for a lead. So I realized that a lot of it is going, obviously, to be nonverbal. So there were periods of time where I would just look in the mirror and kind of just see what my face looked like when I was kind of, for example, in that first scene in the coffee shop, I'm just kind of staring at her. That face was kind of rehearsed, yes.
There's something I always have admired about the old classic movies. If you watch someone who came up in that era, Natalie Wood or Cary Grant or somebody from, it's all in the eyes. You see every emotion and thought. Is that something you've studied, or have you looked at old classics to see how they did that kind of thing?
Actually, I have not. That is something that I like. Like I said, I love watching movies. I watch about a movie a day. So honestly, I will add those to my list. And
oh gosh, especially Natalie Wood. I mean, the woman knew how to use her eyes. Elizabeth Taylor, Cary Grant, Paul Newman. These are people who know how to use their eyes. I would definitely watch that. I mean, I don't know how the director feels about me directing you guys.
Oh, no. Anything, again, like I said, I'm open, you know? If they can help him, I'll give you associate producer credit.
I think one thing that's really... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you go ahead. I was making a bad joke.
Oh, okay. No, I was just saying that one thing that people of today's generation don't realize is how much they can learn by watching old classics. So I really promote that because there's so much there. There's so much depth. And people think of old movies, especially black and white movies, as one-dimensional. But they're really three-dimensional, and I mean, some of the best movies of all time were in black and white.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I haven't seen as many classics as my parents were huge Abbott and Costello fans. So mm-hmm. I grew up watching. I've seen just about every single one of those movies. Granted, those were comedies, but they're honestly some of my favorites. So I have seen some mm-hmm. older movies.
Yeah, Abbott and Costello are great. They're really funny. They're my favorite comedy team, actually. I mean, I like the Marx Brothers, but Abbott and Costello are my favorite. But, especially for actors, I just think it's something that I regret that people don't watch old movies. And because there's, really good actors, somebody like George Clooney or Johnny Depp, you hear them talking, and that's what they talk about. It's something that's important and shouldn't be lost.
Yeah, even as a director and, you know, being a cinematographer as well, I remember about a year ago I had to do a music video, and the concept for the music video was film noir, and it's something I hadn't done before, but I was open to, and I experimented, and I went probably a couple days watching a bunch of film noir, a bunch of classic films,
mm-hmm.
and tried to emulate that style. And I was like, wow, like, the way it's shot, it's told, it really tells the story. And it helped me as a cinematographer because, there wasn't as much movement, obviously, as in today's films. But with the angles, the framing, there's so much that could be told. So I think, I got a lot even from just as a director as well, too, not just an actor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, film is a very, it's a visual medium, and I think it's something that's being lost where, a camera movement can tell you something about the way a character is feeling, or the lack of a character or camera movement can tell you how someone's feeling, or, instead of giving a huge speech about what you're feeling right now, you can see it in the performer's face or things like that. And that's what we're really interested in here, actually. And I think that in a piece that has so much to do with communication, we've been really conscious of, how we're portraying the inner life of, the character versus the external. And I think that's true of all the characters in the show. And it's when you look at people, especially in the age of social media, how much of someone's real personality is coming through on their profile page. But I think that that's deemed as the new public. Like, you get in trouble for something you said online as if you said it, in person. And that's where people have conversations now instead of in person. So I think that it's interesting to bring up old movies because they didn't have things like that, and things were purely expressed through the form. And that's definitely what we're trying to do.
It's funny because, they didn't have social media, but there was still... There was yellow journalism. There was photoplay. The magazines were very important. That's how fandom started, is the magazines. Yeah. In the silent days, they didn't actually have the names of the actors, but through the magazines, they got to know the different actors, and they demanded to know who they are and more about the actual actor because they fell in love with them through the movie and through the magazine. So even though it's not, Facebook, this has always been happening. This is not new. This has been happening since the inception of film.
I think it's also interesting to bring up the when it started out, it wasn't so much about the big celebrity star system. But I think we're seeing that backfire right now. I think people are getting bored of seeing the same old faces up, on screen, and you're starting to feel like this is them playing as this instead of being able to disappear into, someone that really feels like they are that instead of somebody playing that. And I think that to address one of your earlier questions, why do this as a web series? I think one of the greatest answers to that we were feeling was we don't need to have, all these bankable actors or people that have familiarity. We can put forward actors that are the best for the job that disappear into the parts that you 100% believe because you don't have prior associations. And I think that we put a lot of content now that's coming out on Netflix and things like that. I think what's really interesting is that we're getting away, and audiences are following this, we're getting away from the star system and more towards, aside from big budget blockbusters, we're getting more towards what's the story that's being told here. The story is king a little bit more than it used to be instead of the actor being king.
That's true. And I think that's so important. I think it's a great loss not to have that. I have my own individual feelings about the studio system just doing blockbuster movies and not doing the indie films even have started to go that way. So I find it kind of sad, the individuality sort of disappearing from the big screen. But it's like you said, it's in Netflix, it's in TV shows on the cables and pay-per-view. So, I mean, it's still there. It's just you have to look for it.
But I think people are, our audiences are hungry for real stories, and it's not so much about like, ooh, it's almost a gimmick to see, you know, what else can this A-list celebrity do, you know? Like, it's, I think that when storytelling began, it was around a campfire late at night with a small family unit, you know, and they would be bored if the story wasn't captivating, and, you know, they didn't have a gimmick to, such as, you know, casting a celebrity or things like that to dress up a poor story. So I think that storytelling is always the most important aspect of anything that you're doing.
I fully agree. Sadly, gentlemen, we've come to the end of the show. I want to thank you all for being on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Could you tell them where they can get the web series? Is there a website? Can you give them the website or how they get to the series?
Yeah. So, okay. First, you know.
Whoever wants to tell it.
It's voyeurtheseries.com is where you can watch all the episodes. And then also on Facebook, we're facebook.com/voyeurshow.
Okay. So anybody who's interested, check it out. Sounds like a really, really interesting show. And again, I want to thank you guys for being on Chatting with Sherry.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
All right.